SF59 of the Fan, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, rocking the cap today of his favorite football team, the Oakland Raiders, which he is
not Oakland.
Sorry, but to me, they'll always be Oakland.
A huge part of your sell was the Las Vegas angle.
That's right.
I know. But
I'm not cheering for Oakland.
I'm just saying. So normally, I will make apologies for mistakes that I make. Big apology.
Is that
on
true?
Mistakes.
I don't know about that.
I lead the league in apologies for mistakes.
That's because you lead the league in mistakes, though. Percentage-wise, I don't know if this is accurate.
It does, whatever way you want to spin it, what I said is true. All right? I lead the league in apologies. I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong, and I think that it's actually an important trait to have as a human being, is to be able to admit when you make a mistake. I will never admit making mistakes on calling them San Diego Chargers or the Oakland Raiders. Like, I'll be a 68-year-old man being like, you catch the Oakland Raiders game last night? And someone will say, they're the Vegas Raiders, old man. And I'll go, not to me. Not ever to me, okay? I refuse. Our next guest is absolutely one of the best in the business. Stephen A. Smith, co-host First Take and host of Stephen A.'s World on ESPN. Good morning, Stephen. Welcome to Toronto.
What's going on? Good morning, everybody. How y'all doing?
Well, we would be doing better had, you know, basically not the worst happen, where the defense got caved in. Our rookie of the year candidate gets hurt. Gary Trent Jr. sick. And the trade deadline acquisition hurts his thumb. So maybe this is a pretty obvious question, but how did the series change in your mind after game one?
Well, what it did was I went from believing that this series could go seven games to believing that if the Toronto Raptors don't win game two, this series is over in five tops. That's how drastic the change has occurred. Scottie Barnes, just so you know, is my rookie of the year. I have a vote. I voted for him for rookie of the year. I don't think there's any question in my mind about what he brought to the table this year. And he's got an incredible upside, and he deserves a lot of props for that. We know about the championship pedigree that the Toronto Raptors had, led by Nick Nurse. He's a champion as a coach, and so you certainly won't summarily dismiss what they're capable of doing. You still have Siakam in there. You still have Van Vliet in there. You can't dismiss it, but in the end, I just think that the deck is really, really stacked against the Toronto Raptors as we speak. You've got an MVP candidate in Joel Embiid, who got my vote. You got a guy in James Harden who has a lot to prove and is looking for a new $200 million-plus contract. You have a kid in Maxey who is just showing up and showing out and letting the world know that don't just think about Embiid and Harden when you think about the 76ers, think about him. You got a guy in Tobias Harris, who's really a fourth option that is capable of averaging 20 a night and was averaging about that before James Harden arrived. And you got a guy in Doc Rivers that in all likelihood is coaching for his job. And so when you look at all the things, all the motivational tools that they have at their disposal, I'm talking about the Philadelphia 76ers right now, that's a lot for this particular Toronto Raptors squad to overcome. And that's why the odds are stacked against you.
Steven, before Scottie Barnes went down injured, he had turned in quite a good game. He was headed toward a triple-double. He had been arguably the Raptors' best player. I know he's your rookie of the year, but how much higher do you get on a rookie when he's able to step in and this is his first career playoff game and he looks that unfazed by the moment?
Well, I don't think he can get any higher as a rookie. I mean, I'm sitting here telling you he's the rookie of the year in my eyes. I mean, what else can I give him? I mean, I think it's one of those situations where you look at him and you measure his talent and you measure his upside. He's got size. He's got length. He can put the ball in the basket. More importantly, he cares about what he does on the other end of the floor. He defends. And when you take that into consideration, that's really, really what it is. If he just did what he did offensively, then you would have had more people giving stronger consideration to Mobley in Cleveland. But that wasn't the case because of what Scottie Barnes is willing to do on both ends of the floor. And so it's just a testament to Masai Ujiri, his vision, the kind of things that he sees, the kind of talent that he's able to pluck, you know, or from the draft and what have you. Just his vision, the visionary that he is, what he brings to the table. And then you look at some of the other guys that he has. I mean, the Toronto Raptors can play. They're not scrubs. You know, they can ball. It's just that the combination of what they're going up against this particular series combined with the injuries that have taken place, that's an awful lot to ask them to overcome. They've already exceeded expectations because a lot of people were not looking at them as being a formidable player in that regard. So in that respect, they're playing with house money from the standpoint that the expectations are minimal. And as a result of it being minimal, they can go out there and play loosey-goosey, per se, not really, really worried about expectations being placed on their shoulders. And they can just go out there and ball. It's just that, again, it's a lot to ask for this particular squad, especially when you consider the fact that guys are injured.
So do you take a lot of pressure then off of Pascal Siakam, off of Fred VanVleet, off of OG Anunoby, because those are the elder statesmen of this team? They are the remaining core three players of this team. Yes, they're down very many players, but the three of them have had different questions asked about them at different points in their career come postseason. How much pressure is on that trio tonight for you?
I just say Siakam, because Siakam's like 6'9 or so. He's athletic. He can make some things happen, and he has to be who he is. But he's going up, but he has to deal with Embiid. You look at Fred VanVleet, we all know that he's a sniper. He's undersized, but somehow, some way, he's made a name for himself in the National Basketball Association. He's an all-star. And this brother, he can be big time, and he can make some big time shots. He's certainly not shy about trying to make them, and he's fearless in that regard. So we know better than that. And Anunoby's got some things to prove. We get all of that. The year y'all won the championship, he was out. He was injured. He wasn't the guy that you relied upon. Obviously, yeah, Kawhi Leonard there at the time. But since Kawhi Leonard is gone, you know that you know he's got to try and do something to fill that void. Certainly, for physicality, so from a physical perspective, they look the part. He looks the part. But is he going to be the part? That's the question mark. That's still a question about him. So there's questions about him. I'm personally a fan of Gary Trent Jr. I think that he can really, really play. So, you know, he's a guy that's got tremendous potential moving forward. So when you look at the Toronto Raptors, they've already succeeded from the standpoint that they've gotten to the postseason, and you see components on their squad that you want to keep. You know they got to tweak some things, and they've got to add some pieces to the puzzle, but they're not scrubs. You know, they're not a team that you look at and say they're nothing, they're not going anywhere, they're not going to be a threat to anybody, there's nothing interesting or compelling about this team. You can't say that about this squad. This squad is a respectable squad. It's just that you have some elite teams in the Eastern Conference, and they're not one of them. So you got to look at it from that perspective and move forward.
Sticking with the theme of pressure, and maybe some of it's off of Philadelphia after the way game one went, but when you look at the playoffs ahead for James Harden, how much of his legacy is on the line with, hey, this is his third team in a short little bit of time, and this has to work in Philadelphia for him?
I agree with you there. I mean, it's big time. You know, when he went to the finals, as great as James Harden is, the last time he went to the finals was in 2012. That's when he was a reserve for the Oklahoma City Thunder playing behind Russell Westbrook. Turns out that's the last time he and Russell Westbrook have been to the NBA Finals. He goes to Houston for 8 years. He leads the league in scoring about three or four of those years. He goes three consecutive years averaging more than 30. He wins the league MVP. He's established himself as one of the greatest offensive players we have seen. But still couldn't get to the finals. You go to Brooklyn and, you know, you quit on Houston. You didn't want out, and I understand that. A lot of people lament the fact how he handled it, but the reality is he went to the Houston Rockets and said, I want out. You know, you got rid of Daryl Morey, get rid of me too, let me go. Houston initially said no, which is why he came into camp out of shape, because he was saying, I'm not going to stay here. You don't want to keep me because I'm not going to stay here. I'm not going to be myself. Just get over that. So he forced his way out of Houston. Brooklyn's a different situation. He gets to Brooklyn. He doesn't have the greatest relationship with Kyrie Irving. As a result, he ends up departing from Brooklyn because he really wanted to be in Philadelphia all along because Daryl Morey was there. So it was just a stop before he got to Philly because Philly was ultimately his agenda. So he goes to Philadelphia, which means that in some people's eyes, he quit on Brooklyn. And here you are. You go from, you know, Oklahoma City to Houston to Brooklyn. There's still no championship to show for it. And now you're in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid, one of the greatest big men this game has ever seen. And so if James Harden is what he once was, if he is what he's supposed to be, then there's no reason to believe that the Philadelphia 76ers can't get to the NBA Finals. That's how he's being judged. And if that doesn't happen, a lot of people are going to look at him. They're not going to look at Joel Embiid. They're going to look at him. They're not going to look at Tobias Harris. They're not going to look at Tyrese Maxey. They're going to look right in the direction of James Harden because they know he's eligible to opt out and re-up and ultimately get a $200 million plus deal. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, hell no, he doesn't deserve that. Mm-hmm. So a lot is on the line for him, and we'll see what he does with it.
Well, I hope that you're leading First Take and Stephen A's World on Tuesday with James Harden choked game two. It's Stephen A. Smith. And again, so the other story of the weekend has absolutely been the Boston Celtics versus Kyrie Irving. And this is a two-parter for you, and then we'll let you go. How do you feel about the way that Kyrie is reacting to the Celtics fans? And is this good for the game?
I have no problem with how he's reacting to the Celtics fans, and I don't think it's bad for the game at all. I think what's bad for the game is when Kyrie Irving takes so much time off as one excuse after another for him to miss work. You know, before it was personal issues, this past season it was the vaccine mandate, and I've been of the mindset that, you know what, I don't tell people what they should do as it pertains to the vaccine per se. You have people consult your medical professionals and you, the people that you trust, and do what they advise you to do based on your own medical personal condition. I understand that. Do what you have to do. With Kyrie, it's a little bit different. The people that descended in Brooklyn, they were there because of him. Kevin Durant was going to the New York Knicks. It was Kyrie that convinced them, let's go to Brooklyn and establish our own thing. It was Kyrie that said, James Harden, come to Brooklyn. It was Kyrie as the reason why most of them were there. It was Kyrie that told the organization, we don't need a coach. And that's why they hired a novice in Steve Nash, a good man who knows basketball but never coached a day in his life. And that's who you wanted as your head coach, because that's somebody you know will let you do what you want to do. And so with all of those things going on, when you stick your neck out and you're responsible for everybody assembling themselves in a particular area, a lot of people were hesitant about taking the vaccine. But they took it anyway, because they understood they got a job to do. They're trying to win a championship, and if this is what it calls for, that's what they got to do. Everybody except Kyrie. He said, hell with y'all. I'll leave all of y'all hanging. I'm going to do what I want to do. That's my issue with Kyrie Irving. As it pertains to him flipping the bird, you know, sticking up his middle finger at the Boston fans, well, we have to take into account some of the things that fans will say. Is it professional? Is it a good look? No, I get all of that. But when you are spewing a bunch of stuff in his direction, that's a bunch of vitriol and what have you, and that's all he does in the midst of dropping 39 on you, I really don't have a problem with it. What he's doing is putting his animosity for them on display, just like they're doing for him. They're rattling him. He's trying to rattle them. They're going back and forth. Clearly, he's willing to pay a fine for it or what have you, and that's just the way it goes. That's the heat of competition. I thought his statement after the game was right on point. You're going to bring that smoke, that heat in my direction? I'm going to bring it right back at you. We're not going to engage in violence or anything like that. He's not going to jump up into the stands and do something, but he's going to antagonize them just the way that they antagonize him. There's a price that comes with it, because he will be fined for it, make no mistake. But in the end, that's all it is. And if that's a price that he's willing to play in the midst of busting their you-know-what and taking it to them and to their team, so be it. I think it's great competition for fans to witness, and I have no problem with it.
I loved it. I loved this. Stephen A. Smith, thanks so much for making time for our audience this morning. We appreciate it.
No problem. Appreciate it, y'all. Y'all take care.
You too. Stephen A. Smith, co-host of First Take and host of Stephen A.'s World on ESPN+. I don't know how the two of you felt about Kyrie, but him, it's one thing if you're doing that and you crumble, right? And early in that game, he had a turnover where he falls down on the floor and he's getting booed and he kicks the ball out of bounds. And I go, oh boy, this crowd is getting to Kyrie. And then he's just like, bucket, 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 over and over and over again. And who among us, and I will include our producer Daniele because he is on this Zoom call, didn't think that that game was over when Kyrie hit that three to put them up with, I believe, 30 some seconds left, maybe 40 at most. He played his ass off. And if Kyrie plays this way and the Celtics fans remain this way, I'm not endorsing anybody. I thought Charles Barkley put it best in his post-game show yesterday after the Suns-Pelicans game ended, where he goes, 95% of fans are great, 5% of fans are awful, but this is the nature of the beast. I think it's also the nature of the beast that Kyrie Irving can give it back, but he has to back it up. Because if you do that and you melt down, then the hot takes start to come out. Then the, oh my God, Boston fans got to Kyrie takes come out. And I got to say, if he does crumble, I can't disagree with some of those takes.
Yeah, but he doesn't crumble, right? He's Kyrie Irving, and he thrives off of this stuff, and it's, you know, it's great. I love it. It's, you know, Trae Young at MSG, right? To the level of Trae Young's coming out when WWE's at MSG to troll them and stuff.
The Trae Young one was worse last year, and we're acting like Kyrie is unprecedented right now, that he's dealing with this, like, unprecedented level of hate.
People want to jump to
Boston
talking about Kyrie. Like, it's Boston fans are always a talking point. Kyrie's always a talking point. Here's the
thing.
It's
a perfect mesh. Perfect mesh of fan base people hate, player people hate. Pick a side of the sides you hate.
It's also like Kyrie shows in that game. He's so unbelievably good when he's on. How did this not work in Boston? So it's extra interesting, and I'm so glad we got this playoff series. The only one that on paper is maybe more interesting from that kind of dynamic is Brooklyn-Philly, and that's only if Simmons is playing. So Kyrie goes 39 points on 20 field goal attempts in this game. He's an absolute monster. The fact that they were in that game with, I don't know, the worst shooting performance of Kevin Durant's career in a big spot is remarkable, and I think
And all the turnovers and the rebounding.
Six turnovers. Yeah, they got killed on the glass. This is this was not Brooklyn's best game. Kyrie dragged them to that being a one possession game. Ton of credit to the Celtics. Tatum's bottling up Durant on that final offensive possession.
What a game.
Kyrie's
a
got
game.
Nowhere to go. Horford has an unbelievable defensive game. And then, of course, that final bucket. But Kyrie was the story here. And Kyrie's going to be the story in game two in this one. JD, you said the takes would come out if Kyrie didn't have a good game. In the spirit of having had Stephen A on the show today, I'm curious as to what is your, maybe not hottest, but the take you're most ready to jump on after one game in each NBA series so far.
Oh no, it's definitely my hottest take, and it's one that I was sharing with the friends I was watching that Celtics game with. So you asked Stephen A. Smith about the pressure on James Harden. And it's correct. I think that James Harden has the most pressure on his shoulders from a legacy standpoint out of any significant player in the postseason right now, right? Like, either of you disagree?
No, I agree.
Yeah. Harden loses this series and they lose because of him, then it's like he enters a whirlwind with that Philadelphia 76ers media, with those fans, like, especially now, right, where there is a short-handed Raptors squad. Like, now it's like it's a completely different threat level if you're James Harden, which I hope manifests itself into him choking tonight. But watching that game, the Brooklyn Nets against the Boston Celtics, Kevin Durant really struggled. Like, I've never seen Kevin Durant struggle like that. Like, never. Kevin Durant's entire thing in the postseason is that he is unguardable and he finds a way to score. It dawned on me that after James Harden, the player with the most pressure on him is not Kyrie Irving. Because in some ways, we expect Kyrie Irving to be a little up and down. Also, Kyrie has one of the biggest shots in NBA history. He is a champion. And I think that we undoubtedly have Kyrie's legacy sealed a little bit in certain ways. He doesn't have the ability to touch on, I'm one of the greatest NBA players who ever lived. He's in the tier below, which is a great tier, but it's not the greatest of all times tier. It's not the top 10 players in NBA history tier. Kevin Durant can touch that tier. He can touch the top 10 players who ever lived tier, because a lot of people, including myself, believe him to be the greatest scorer who ever lived. The most unguardable player alive and to ever have lived and played basketball. Watching him get bottled up that way. And I know 24 points looks okay on the box score, but not for Kevin Durant. Not in a game where his team lost by 1 point. I thought, you know what? It's Kevin Durant who is number two in the legacy power rankings here. He decided to leave the Golden State Warriors. I watched that Warriors game. They bodied the Denver Nuggets. And you know what they would have continued to do all postseason long had Kevin Durant been there? They would have been the runaway favorites in the Western Conference, no doubt about it. We'd be waiting for Suns Warriors, but it would be a formality, and we would be waiting for Kevin Durant to score a billion points against them and for us to say, poor Chris Paul, why did Chris Paul keep running into this Warriors team in one way or another? If Kevin Durant loses to the Boston Celtics and that defense remains semi-effective, he's going to have games, right? Like, in this series, there's no way that Kevin Durant's going to get held under 30 throughout the entire series. But if they lose multiple games in which Kevin Durant can't score 30, if he can't make that adjustment where when right now he's dribbling the ball into the middle of the floor and there are Celtics players that are swarming him and swatting at balls, if he cannot overcome that defense, we are going to look at that Brooklyn decision potentially as a mistake. We are going to question why James Harden left, especially if Harden is moving on to the next round and he looks good. And we are going to be saying, how many years does Kevin Durant have left to go out and get that championship where he is unquestionably the man of a team? And so for me, the hottest take coming out of game one is Kevin Durant's legacy on the line against the Boston Celtics as the can he create his own team around him and win?
I think KD, I agree. He has a ton on the line here, and this is a guy who the whole book on him is he doesn't struggle in the playoffs, right? He's led the postseason in scoring five times, and if you look at the history of high usage players in the postseason throughout NBA history, no one has ever been as efficient as Kevin Durant in the postseason at high usage. So we're talking more efficient than LeBron, Giannis, Embiid, MJ, Shaq. Pick your guy.
Shaq is absurd that he is more efficient than Shaq in the playoffs. Like, that is absurd. Do you not remember Shaq in the playoffs? Do you not remember, like, Scott Pollard down there being like, please, someone end this game for the love of God. Please make it stop.
But this is Shaq only shot 50% on free throws for his career, and that hurts your efficiency a little bit. But, yeah, Durant's got a lot on the line. I don't think, like, his regular season resume is going to be unassailable, of course. But, yeah, he has made some questionable decisions in terms of what do you think your path to championships are, or what do you think your paths to legacy are. And it's not entirely fair that he doesn't get the full credit for those two rings, but he orchestrated this Brooklyn thing, and yeah, the Kyrie Vax thing sucked, and the Harden commitment or wanting to be in Philly thing sucked, but, you know, you layer a couple of these things on top of each other, and it starts to look like, okay, well, maybe your decision-making is the common factor here. Now, having said all that, I have next to zero doubt that Kevin Durant is going to figure it out and be good in this series and shoot better than 9 of 24 and have a game where he's, the best player on the floor again, maybe multiple games. But a huge credit to Boston, their number one defense during the season, their number one defense against top teams. Very obvious in that one. And they couldn't contain Kyrie. But, hey, look at the Raptors and the Embiid Harden question. If you can contain one of Kyrie or KD, you like your chances of evening that out and that talent disparity there. Or not even a disparity in that case, just two very, very otherworldly players. My only hot take from the weekend, I'll just jam it in here if that's okay. Mm-hmm. The Utah Jazz won that game against the Luka Doncic Dallas Mavericks team. The Jazz got it. I'm done. I'm done with the Mitchell Gobert Jazz. That was so unimpressive against a team without an MVP-caliber player. Gobert
33
is 33
for Mitchell, though, right? Wasn't it 33?
Well, 32, yeah. But Gobert had one field goal attempt in that game. He spent half the game waving for a pass and never getting it. Yeah. The chemistry there just isn't there at the level it needs to be. Mitchell, this is a couple years in a row now. He's looked like an even better player in the postseason when the lights get brighter. Gobert is a top five defensive rating unto himself. But something is not clicking there and has continued to not click. If you can't beat the Luka-less Mavericks with more authority than that, where it's coming down to the final possession and Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie are the top two scorers on the other side, and I say this as a fan of both of those guys, they should not be 1A and 1B taking you down to the wire if you're a serious postseason contender. So I will be, the second Luka comes back, I will be fading the Utah Jazz. They are not in action tonight for me to fade, though. No, they are, we don't know about Luka yet.
The only thing is about this take is that I've been done with the Utah Jazz for like 3 years. So.
I know. It was just very obvious in that game where it's like, oh, yeah, no, you get a game without Luka. Like, imagine if the Raptors played a game without Embiid in this series. Uh-huh. If they barely won, we'd be like, ooh, that's not good when Embiid comes back. Mm-hmm. So Luka might not be back tonight. He's doubtful. But we'll tee up that, and we'll tee up the rest of the NBA slate, the NHL slate. The Jays are off, so we won't get to tee up the Jays. But all that's next in the Wake and Rake. On the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 Fan, JD Blake and Ailish. It's time for our Wake and Rake segment, which almost hit on Friday. We've been 2-1 a few times over the last week. We were close. We were close, but close doesn't cut it. Got the Raptors-Sixers game 2 tonight, obviously.
What were our picks Friday? I never have the thing lined up in front
of
me.
You had the Atlanta Hawks money line. Ailish had George Springer over.
Because I found that out at the baseball game, streaming it a little bit on my phone, trying to get the close out, where I'm like, I'm paying attention to the Blue Jays, but in my tight little section watching Trae Young and going, please get this done for me, right.
You also would have seen at that Blue Jays game, Ailish hit the George Springer over 1.5 total bases. No doubter in that one. Springer had a nice little game.
Right.
And before any of that started, Nick Pivetta got shelled and didn't make it to the third inning.
Okay.
So, oops.
No, yes, correct. Yes. Yeah, I that's what I was going to say, because I couldn't remember, because you two had weird, like, MLB player prop ones, and I went, okay, this is a little bit off the beaten path. But Blake
MLB
did hit the Joe Musgrove.
MLB player props is how I'm eating right now. I was on a nice little MLB streak before on Friday. So
feed the people. That's what we do here. Very nice, Ailish, with the George Springer one. That would have been a tough one had you taken that for Saturday, and then he's sitting. You know,
yeah.
Although you get the push.
That's rough.
Yeah, it's a no play. It's like if you had an Austin Matthews goal prop last night, you just get the void, the old void.
I put a hefty amount of money down on Matthews to score that goal, at least one, heading
to the
game.
But you got the refund, right?
Yeah, although, can I tell you guys a quick gambling story from that game that's an all-time regret moment?
Mm-hmm.
So, I pick Pierre Engvall as the first goal scorer of the game. Obviously, he is not that. But I talk with my brother about how the odds have not changed. They're 18-1 for him to be the next goal scorer. We look at it. It's 18-1. Pierre Engvall. He steps out onto the ice. They take a face-off. And I go, should we bet this right now? I didn't pull the trigger. He scored on that very shift. We were about to bet him 18-1. And missed it by seconds of trying to input it, jamming away at it as they are on the rush too, live, seeing it develop, the play develop. I'm like, please go through, please go through. Obviously didn't go through. He scores the goal. He scored, and it was a moment where in the game, everyone's celebrating, and I'm like, that's why you can't gamble on certain things in games. Like, that's why I usually don't bet on the home teams unless I'm actually at the game, and I bet just them to win, because that just sapped all the joy from the Engvall goal for me, not having bet the 18-1 in the moment. Just a killer gambling miss. 18-1 right there, right on the doorstep of it. Missed it by, I would say, 20 seconds.
A 14-1 that I think I got you in on Saturday that highlights, I want Ailish's take on this, because it was such an up-and-down day for Raimel Tapia.
That was my bet, Blake. I told you, I was like, the Raimel Tapia stolen base, I brought it up Friday.
Right, but Saturday morning, you were like, you were like, oh, I'm in such bad shape. What are my bets today?
I know, but that was like the Raimel Tapia only one, is that he's got insane value right now on stolen bases.
And he was leading off.
I know, it was so painful, painful.
Ailish, you rode the Tapia ups and downs at that game Saturday. Big swings.
Yeah, I think the entire audience also rode the Tapia ups and downs that game. it was fun as soon as we got there, and he was lead off. I texted you guys like, oh, what an experience that I'm about to have. Get to come to this game and see him lead off. I've always been a fan, and then later on in the game, I've never been a fan of him, but yeah.
He rips the double, and I'm like, no, stay at first and then steal second. You don't need second now.
So he... His hair looks amazing when he dives into home plate. The hair, when I'm like, I don't know, but like your hair. And then he slides into home, and I go, oh, right, you steal bases for a living. And when you steal, that thing's going to look amazing. But I think that any time Tapia hits in the leadoff spot, which I'm guessing that he will for a few times, whenever George Springer gets an off day, it looks like that's going to be the play, right? Whenever he does that, if we can get that 18-1 or 16-1, or it's been kind of between 16 and 18-1 on different sites, that's absolutely the play. Okay, so no Blue Jays.
Is there a better looking back to back hair than Tapia, than Bo in any lineup?
Bo, like, here's the thing. Those guys got to get on base, though, for it to work. Neither of them are really doing that.
Apparently, since he dyed the bottom of his hair, the reverse frosted tips, he has been playing very poorly. So I think there might be a correlation there. So
aren't they just highlights? I don't know. I guess I don't know what
ombre.
Highlights.
That's like an ombre style. But highlights is kind of like when it goes through your whole hair. But he's just got the bottoms.
Are they? Like, I thought it was all the way through because it's quite
a
move
to tell,
for Bichette
actually, when he's
to
got his
do
helmet
that.
On.
Like, it's highlights are pretty aggressive. Like, the hair
working,
is nice.
So might have to go back.
High school Blake invented the inverted frosted tips. I'll get to the bottom of this.
Yes,
I'll ask him which Shoppers Drug Mart boxes he was doing, whether he did what I did and go, oh, I'm going to dye it black, let it grow out, and then do blonde at the bottom. We'll get to the bottom of this. I'm going to head down to the ballpark next home game and figure out exactly what's the question.
I had friends that used to go on vacation and like say, oh, the sun dyed my hair. I put lemon in it and it bleached it, where they literally went and got highlights and they tried to be like, oh, my hair gets blonde in the sun. Like, I just don't get it done.
Why lie?
Admit to dyeing your hair. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Admit to dyeing your hair. Okay, so there's a game at 11 o'clock today, Twins Red Sox. But other than that, this is always one of the weird ones where you get four NBA games, you know, on the weekend back to back to back, all early in the day. You got Jays, just like you basically spend all day just hammering bets away, right? Yesterday, hammering bets. Saturday, hammering bets. You got to wait a little while longer. So let's start with this Raptors line. Again, Raptors plus 7.5 right now. Blake, you had indicated that you think the line is going to move when Trent is a fit. Because I feel like the line is already taken into account. But if you do feel that way, is there value already on kind of jumping on the Sixers?
I don't know that I'd say that, because you do expect a bounce back performance for the Raptors. But let's look at what happened last game. The 76ers were favored by 4.5. They beat a fully healthy Raptors team for the most part by 20. And now the Raptors are heading into this game potentially missing 3 of the 7 rotation players they trust in Scottie Barnes, Gary Trent Jr., and Thad Young, who are all listed as doubtful. And Nick Nurse seemed very pessimistic about their chances of playing at practice yesterday. None of them participated in practice, and that had been the case for Gary Trent for a little bit. On the Philadelphia side, it's clear, other than a couple G League up and down guys aren't available. So to only move that 3 points, I would have expected after the way game one went, the line to move maybe a point on its own. I think Scottie Barnes is probably worth a point. And then once you start stacking these injuries on top of each other, where we're talking about, hey, are Malachi Flynn or Armani Brooks or Yuta Watanabe in the rotation now? Guys, we haven't seen play real minutes basically at all. I would have expected this to go like 8.5, 9.5. I don't think there's tremendous value there, but I was surprised it only moved 3 after the game one result and with all these injuries.
Okay, when I'm looking at betting this tonight, I think it just depends on what you think the Raptors are going to do. And I want them to have a big, massive bounce back performance. I want Pascal Siakam to be the all-star that we know he is. And that's kind of the way I will be betting it, is that he's going to have a massive night. He's going to put up his over on his points. You know, he's going to have more of a responsibility, obviously, tonight. So if you're believing in this Raptors team and you're believing that they need this win, which we talked about at the top of the show, that this is basically a game 7 must win, I'm going all in on Pascal Siakam to just dominate. And he's done it before. There's the track record of him showing up big in big games. Maybe not especially in the playoffs, but here's the chance to rewrite that narrative. So I'm all in Pascal tonight.
So Siakam's points over under is at 25.5. You can also get points, rebounds, assists at 40.5. Game one, he was at 34 in 40 minutes for points plus rebounds plus assists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that if there is a play for Siakam with me, it's the yes on the double-double at 2-1. That's not the worst idea for me, considering the minute load that he's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little nervous about 25.5. I won't lie. I just say this. 2 things. 1, if you think that the Raptors are going to get more points or that this locks in differently, I would say be patient. It's hard for me to envision a scenario where there's a lot of money coming in on the Raptors today in terms of the confidence of the markets. That's just my guess. But I would say hold off on this if you do want to buy the Raptors, because the number, if you know, Blake is correct in this, it could swell a little bit is the indication I'm getting off this. I would also say that, like, I don't know how much stock I put into gambling when we do the, well, they need this one thing. Because Philly needs this one too. Like, it's a playoff game. And I think that we delude ourselves at times as fans where we go, well, these guys need it. They need it. They need it. It's like, yeah, they needed game one and they got bodied for 20 points. Like, they needed that game. They really wanted that game. And so all I would say is that if we're setting this up, and you think that the Raptors do have edges in certain places and you do like the Raptors on the spread or you think that there's value on the money line, absolutely. But I would caution against the whole they need this game element because this is the playoffs.
Yeah, and just sorry to follow on the line movement. It has touched 8.5 some places this morning. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's a sensitive line right now around 7.5. But I think that probably ends at 8.5. So you can get an extra point there. And if you're playing the money line bounce back, that would generally come with a little extra juice on the plus 265. We also have, do you want to go to the other games or do you have?
Well, no, I just have some other stuff on Raptors just quickly in terms of bets for this game. Tyrese Maxey's sitting at 18.5 points.
Ooh. Oh,
I don't know how you don't bet that based on his game one performance. Like,
based on
the Raptors,
his entire performance since they acquired James Harden.
Yeah, 18.5 is just, to me, is too low for Tyrese Maxey heading into this game. It's like I looked at all these props of points and who stuck out to me, and that to me is a little disrespectful, honestly. Like, I don't think that the Raptors are all of a sudden going to change their game plan to be loading up on Tyrese Maxey because he got hot for a game. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Joel Embiid is still going to draw a lot of attention. They're down a couple of really good defensive players in Thad Young and Scottie Barnes. I think that Maxey is kind of a no-brainer bet at 18.5 points, and I know that a lot of Raptors fans don't want to hear that, but if you're looking for a happiness edge tonight, 18.5 for Tyrese Maxey, for a guy that just looked like the human ball of flames and is playing at home in front of a crowd that was chanting his name as he was at the free throw line, I would say that him getting 20 points is not outside the realm of possibility. Let's just put it that way. 18.5. Are you surprised by that, Blake? Like, if you would have guessed
not,
the over-under.
Not entirely, because the points over-unders tend to not be super sensitive to one game. And he averaged 18.7 after the Harden acquisition. What I'd say to that, though, is he shot 52% overall and 48% on threes after the Harden acquisition. There's a real case he should have been taking more than 12 field goal attempts. And that maybe it's not 21 like he took last game, but that guy should be in the 15, 16, 17 field goal attempt range. He should be their number three guy. And I think the Raptors are going to come out even more aggressive on James Harden after they were so sleepy in those help assignments this last one. So, yeah, I don't think they're like I said earlier, I don't think that the Raptors are going to rewrite the game plan around Tyrese Maxey. I think they want to execute a better within their Embiid and Harden game plans and see how that shakes out before they, hey, we got to guard everyone straight up because Maxey's dropping 30 pieces.
Absolutely. Now I am quote unquote ready to move on.
All right.
So the other game you want to start with, you said that you're fading the Jazz when Luka comes back, but do we know? It doesn't appear Luka's coming back.
He is doubtful for
they're
tonight.
They're heavily underdogs.
Yeah, he's doubtful for tonight. So the Jazz -5.5 at the Mavericks is it's a no play for me. That's the line the Jazz were on Saturday, and I was heavy on the Jazz, and that was quite the sweat to pull out. No Luka still. The line staying the same makes sense. I just don't have a lot of faith in the Jazz there. The other game tonight is Warriors -7 hosting the Nuggets, coming off of a pretty affirming first victory in that series, 123-107. And boy, do the Nuggets not have anything other than Nikola Jokic. That poor guy.
I want to start with the Jazz game. I know that you were really unimpressed with Rudy Gobert's offensive performance, but...
Well, not even his. He can't get himself the ball. He only took one field goal attempt.
Yeah. So what I did like in that game, though, is Utah's defense was incredible, especially from basically the second quarter onwards. They started a little slow, but from that point on, they just locked up that Mavericks team. And I just don't see what the Mavericks' adjustment is going to be without adding Luka Doncic to the fold. Like, it was possession after possession of Dallas trying to dive into the paint, Utah being able to stay in front of their guys, and just not a lot. They got to the stripe a ton. they got to this is where I'm going with this, Blake. Yeah, I don't like the Mavs team total. I like the Utah Jazz to continue to play good defense here. The total in this game is 205. I think there's going to be some regression here when it comes to free throws and three-point shooting for the Utah Jazz. They shot horrifically from three in that game, and they got killed in the free throw battle. If this thing normalizes just even a touch, Dallas is in deep doo-doo. Like, they are in real trouble to start this series because they do not have bucket getters. And this is kind of like, I'm sorry, but Raptors fans will understand this as well a little bit, where we've seen undersized point guards struggle in the postseason at times when they try to create at the basket. And that's what happened to Jalen Brunson in this game. Guy kept going to the cup, and he kept getting met by monster players. And if they don't bite on the head fakes, that didn't really leave him very much room to operate. Dinwiddie has to play extremely well in this game. And historically, the Utah Jazz have done unbelievably well against Dinwiddie. So I'm actually rolling again with the Utah Jazz as a money line play tonight in a parlay piece. I'm rolling with the Mavs under 100.5 points, which is there. I do not think that they're going to hit that total if Utah continues to play this way. And I would even be saying that I slightly suggest the Jazz minus 5.5, even though I haven't looked phenomenal, because they missed so many threes in that first game. And if they just get a touch better from three and they get a touch better offensively from Rudy Gobert, I just look at this one and say, what are they going to do? Like, regression-wise, I see all the regression working in the favor of the Jazz and none of the regression working in the favor of the Mavs.
Yeah, I would say the Mavs would probably do a little bit of shooting regression positive, but they're not going to get 34 free throw attempts again.
Spencer, yeah, that's Dinwiddie, what I mean. They got bailed out by the officials in that game. It was outrageous.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm with you on that analysis. I certainly like the Mavs under. I just am unimpressed enough with the Jazz tonight. And again, I took Jazz minus 5.5 on Saturday and nothing.
You think I want to live in a world where I'm betting on the Jazz, Blake Murphy? Like, you think I like this? You think this is where I want to be with my life? Like, of course not. Even when you took the Donovan Mitchell has been better in the playoffs take that you had right before the break, in my mind I went, yeah, he actually does seem to have good second and third quarters. And then, but in that game even, it got tight and it got really scary because Mitchell couldn't score. So it's a low confidence, but just based on the schedule tonight of things I like to bet in the NBA, I have to roll with this because I just think that it's hard for me to see a massive deviation other than what you just said, which is that they're kind of a choker franchise that seems to sometimes just blow it in these moments, and that's what I'm cautioning against. But from a talent standpoint and from a availability standpoint and a what happened in game one and translating it to game two, everything should be telling you that it's the Jazz's game to lose.
Dallas, good defensively, but that's what they're hanging their hat on here. Ailish, how's mom feeling about her Warriors?
She's very confident. She loves the Warriors. She's been riding the Warriors. She only watches the Warriors.
Watches the Warriors. I love the idea.
Honestly, my mom
she's
has
not
like
watching
one,
raps tonight.
No, she won't be. She has like one app on her phone, and it's the Golden State Warriors app. And she called the television company and ordered Warriors channels and doesn't know anything but Warriors. So yeah, Warriors minus 7. Definitely got to bet that one just for my mom's sake.
What are you betting in the Wake and Rake for your own sake?
I'm going to go over to hockey. Quite a few NHL games on tonight. No Leafs, but a lot of heavy favorites. I got like a minus 300, a minus 380, a minus 320. Mm-hmm. But I like the Calgary Flames over the Blackhawks on the puck line. So Calgary has handedly beat bad teams. They are coming off a 9-1 win over the Coyotes. They beat the Kraken twice. They beat the Sharks. The Ducks, like, they can beat bad teams. They lost the Golden Knights on Thursday, but they're pretty good. So I'm going to go Flames over Blackhawks on the puck line. So minus 1.5, which means they need to win by 2 goals. And I feel confident in that one.
So there's a rare thing in the NHL tonight, which is the you look at the Coyotes and Carolina game. It's a similar situation where if you even want to bet the puck line, it's minus 141 for a goal and a half, which is just a very disrespectful line.
At least this one's at minus 115, which is like a nicer piece to put in.
Yeah,
I
know.
Like shocked at that other one.
I know. I got to tell you, this is a kind of a low confidence night for me. I haven't seen anything that I particularly love. Part of me just wants to have fun and turn this Capitals Colorado game on and see if it'll hit the over, because there's a ton of goal scorers and there's just a ton of scoring potential in this one. So I think that's just what I'm going to do. I like a parlay tonight of the Warriors and the Jazz, because I just don't see anything happening there, but I think the line got really accounted for. I'm going to be waiting for some player props and sort of looking at the way things shake out with Jordan Poole, because Steph Curry didn't look like he's going to play a ton. If they don't need Steph Curry to play in these games, I don't think they're going to ask Steph Curry to do too much. And hold on, let me just pull up the Jordan Poole props to see if it's up yet, because the last I checked it wasn't. Yeah, still no... wait a second.
I don't have it.
Yeah, I don't have it either still. I've been waiting for Jordan Poole props because I'm very curious to see where the point total comes in. But that's a guy that I'm looking out for right now. I would say if you're going to bet that Warriors game, Ailish, if I was going to give your mom a tip, it's like avoid Steph Curry, because they're going to be very cautious. He didn't start the second half in that game. That was a weird feeling.
He didn't start, period.
Yeah, didn't start the second half. He comes out and he basically ends up getting very, very few minutes. Field goal attempts, he didn't look quite right yet. So I'm still going to push Poole. That's a pick that I like. But for wake and rake purposes, since that's not up yet, I will go with the over 6.5 in the Capitals and Avalanche game tonight.
Nice. I like that one.
Sounds good. I'm going back to pitcher strikeout props. It's been, I know I'm only one of three on the picks I've actually made for the wake and rake, but it's been...
I was going to say, it's actually been a nightmare. You're like, I've been making so much money.
Yeah, you keep saying I'm killing it. Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Are we really going to go off of a three-game sample here? And come on. No, it's been a pretty profitable corner so far. Basically, a lot of what you're looking for right now is, okay, who's working an actual workload? What are lineups looking like early in the season? I'm going with Frankie Montas over 6.5 strikeouts tonight. Baltimore has been the second highest strikeout team in baseball, striking out almost 30% of their plate appearances. Montas has settled in generally at a 25 to 26% strikeout rate. This is his third start, so he's stretched out. You're not worried about the four inning thing and 70 pitches kind of thing. He also, you know, if you like any of the daily projections for DFS or whatever you're looking at, he has easily the highest projections today, even higher than a Clayton Kershaw coming off a 7 perfect inning getting the hook kind of day. So Montas over 6.5 strikeouts against a very punchless Baltimore Orioles team, and you get the rare Oakland game that doesn't start too late. It starts at 9:30. So you don't have to stay up.
You don't have to stay up.
But he's the starter. He'll be out by 11 o'clock, and you're still on NBA. Like, we're still watching the Warriors game. Yeah.
Blake, that was going to be my spin, too, is like, it's one thing if you had picked the run line or something along those lines, because then I go, are you really going to make me stay up, Blake, to watch the last leg of a parlay?
I mean, your pick's a 9 o'clock start, too.
I know. Well, my pick, though, is... I guess it is late. There's a lot of late NHL games tonight, huh?
Yeah, nothing starts at 7.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because it's usually like you start at the top of the picks, right? And it's like, 7. I thought that the game was actually East Coast because of where it was, and I realized that Colorado was on the bottom, which means that they are the home team. Okay, so I like this wake and rake. I think this is a good one. Again, we've basically just had wins in 2 or 3 nights recently, so I'm feeling good about where we're at, and I'm feeling good about regression to the mean a little bit here with these player props, and I really like the Montas one. You don't really have to twist my arm to get me to get a bet in against the Orioles, unless it's with the Yankees, who the Yankees can't do anything against the Orioles. Like, it's just
our boy Nestor on the weekend with like 12 strikeouts for the Yankees.
12 strikeouts, and the Nestor Yankees Cortez scored 0 runs against the Baltimore Orioles.
This is why we stick with the pitcher props, because then we don't have to rely on those bad hitters. Nelson Cortez had 12 strikeouts over 5 innings against this Baltimore team.
Unreal.
Like, he
Unreal.
Looked good against the Jays, but not 12 strikeouts good. That I would be lying if I said Nelson Cortez's line did not inform my decision on upgrading Frankie Montas from a play to the wake and rake play. Your wake and rake again, April 18th. Frankie Montas over 6.5 strikeouts. The Calgary Flames -1.5, and the over 6.5 in Washington Capitals Colorado Avalanche.